How's it going, sir?
Good, fine, thanks. Good to see you.
Very good to see you as well. Captain, you're here too. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good today. How you doing, Ralph?
I'm doing great, man. It's good to see you as well.
Oh, man, always good.
It's always good. Always good to see the captain on the kill streak. Now, okay, so Charles, you've not done one of these debates on the kill stream, so I'll kind of lay it out. What I usually do is let each person talk really like a max of 10 minutes, you know, 5 to 10 minutes. I don't put a clock on it, but if it goes really long, I might say, hey, you know, wrap it at the start to give their opening statement. And then after that, it's kind of just back and forth between the two participants. And I may interrupt here and there with a question or to stop you guys talking over each other. But for the most part, it's a participant-driven debate, right? Because I just feel like those are more entertaining. But I will step in here or there, or if I feel like I need to, if you guys start talking over each other a ton or whatever. But that's kind of how I do it. Mostly hands off. That's how we do it here on the kill stream. But I'll let you start. Now, again, I'll remind people, and we could get off into some other stuff too. But the topic of the debate is actually Gaza and whether or not Israel is perpetrating a genocide in Gaza. And so would you like to start, Charles, or would you like Captain to start? I had in my mind that you would start, but it's up to you if you want him to start.
I'd be happy to start. That's
okay.
Fine.
Okay, go ahead. I'll let you start.
All right. Thanks so much, Ethan and Captain. Mm-hmm. I would argue that Israel is not engaging in any kind of a genocide in Gaza. Let's give a little historic background. In 1995, Israel withdrew from Gaza completely under the government of Ariel Sharon, who was a pretty hawkish prime minister of Israel. Not only did they completely withdraw, but they also stripped away all of the Jewish residents of Gaza, about 10,000 people, in some cases at gunpoint. They didn't want to leave. They helped the Palestinian Authority develop a police force, a security force. Money was pouring into Gaza from all over the world, including the United States. Gaza is not a poor place, as anyone can see from pictures of the city. It's beachfront property, and there's a lot going on there. The Palestinian Authority and the people of Gaza had the opportunity to turn Gaza into what could have been described as like a Singapore or a Hong Kong. I mean, they had every opportunity to do this. And Israel was offering more. They had also withdrawn at the time, which is lesser known, from Jericho. And they were talking about withdrawing from other parts of Judea and Samaria. Israel asked nothing in return other than one simple expectation. And that was that they hoped that they would have a peaceful border there. So that the people of Israel could continue with their farms and their villages and live in peace. But unfortunately, about 2 years afterwards, Hamas was elected. They took over Gaza as a dictatorship, and they basically killed hundreds of Palestinian Authority people. And they began to launch a war against Israel. They launched something like in the vicinity of 6,000 missiles into Israel. They began to build this incredible tunnel network that we're now discovering, including tunnels into Israel, where they would come out and try to kill as many Jews and Israelis as possible. And every time Israel would try to get a ceasefire, they would immediately start firing again. They didn't even pay any attention to the ceasefires. And this continued for years, and it got more creative in that they started to float gas balloons into Israel to burn the fields and try every kind of terror they could try. There was a huge shipment of arms and munitions from Iran, and called the Karine A, that the Israeli Navy intercepted. So they had to put up a blockade. Eventually, of course, the final straw was the October 6th attack, the so-called flood, which had been originally patented by Soleimani, in which they just flooded into Israel and slaughtered as many people as they could, raping women, killing every person they could reach at that music festival and also in several villages alongside the border. And so I would argue that Israel, acting like any sane sovereign state, has a right to defend the lives and the property of its own people. In fact, to do otherwise, you would forfeit the right to be a sovereign state. So Israel is now in the process of getting rid of these forces that are trying to kill them. Now, I don't think that they're trying to do a genocide. They're not trying to kill innocent people. The problem is it's very complicated. The combatants in Hamas put on civilian clothes, even though they have military gear, and they hide behind innocent people. They hide behind families. And so Israel has to go through the very difficult process of trying to find them and to try to find the tunnels and find the missile launchers and find the military sites amongst the civilian population. I would argue that it's a difficult job and they are doing it as best they can under the circumstances.
Go ahead, Captain.
No problem. I think you meant 2005, not 1995. Am I correct?
No, 1995 was the year that, it was
2005. You know, I was looking it up when you said that, and I think 1995.
You're right.
And in 2007, when I look up the history, the part that you're missing after Hamas, when they seized it, it was like Israel put up a blockade. But when you mentioned history, one would also argue that you can't go to 2005 history. You would have to go to the history of you would have say before y'all got there. So if you talk about, let's say, in the early 1900s, when y'all first got there, one would argue that the Palestinians being displaced when they were promised not to be displaced, when they were promised not to lose their religion, when they was promised not to lose their way of life, only to lose it. And initially, there was a limit of how many immigrants could come into the land with the Balfour Act. So one could say that your breaking of the rules is the actual cause of the conflict. Now, me, myself, personally, I don't care for either party, but I can't judge a matter. What I mean by say care, I don't care for either party, like the land really belongs to the children of Israel. That's a conversation maybe we can get to at some point.
Yes.
Obviously, we believe differently who the children of Israel are. Okay, no problem. We'll see. Right. So, when we talk about history, historically, it was colonialism that you guys went to imply on the Palestinians that has caused this never-ending war. So when you say genocide, when we look at the numbers of deaths, it wouldn't even be comparable with the deaths of the Palestinian or the Arabian people as opposed to your people. You can also argue that the Palestinians invited you in. I can play a video if you want to see where y'all came in on the boat. Like 1935, y'all come in on the boat and like, don't hurt us like the Germans hurt us. And they bought y'all in. And then when they bought y'all in, y'all began to eradicate them. So you would be the cause of their fight or of their plight. It's like if I'm trying to come in and destroy your home and live in your home and you're fighting me in my home, you're not wrong for retaliating against me because I'm invading your home. So you guys are invading their home and then get mad when they fight back. That's how I look at it as an outsider to have nothing invested in Israeli people or Palestinian people. Being able to look at it objectively, I would say that you guys are genociding and you won't stop until even, and I'll end on this, what's your current prime minister's name? I don't want to mess up the Hebrew.
Benjamin Netanyahu.
Netanyahu, right?
Mm-hmm.
Netanyahu made a point to say that we're going to remember them like Amalek. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That statement? You know, when Amalek did what they did, was Amalek purposely targeted the weak and the elderly.
Exactly.
Right. And so that's the reason that the Lord told King Saul to get vengeance on them.
That's right.
The Palestinians aren't going after the weak and elderly. Y'all are in reverse because it's like 30-something
thousand. They did on October 8th. I don't mean to interrupt here, but that's exactly what they did.
Well, y'all, when we look at the death tolls right now, they are at 30,000 dead.
Mm-hmm. According to Hamas, by the way.
The Israelis hypothesize that 10,000 of those are military.
Right.
So that would be 20,000 civilians. Y'all are only at, 1,400?
Well, I mean, first of all, you also have to factor in how many of the Palestinians have been killed by Hamas itself, because they keep misfiring their missiles and they keep killing people that they suspect as traitors, like these 30 people who were found dead in black plastic bags.
But I want to ask my question. If you take, if it's 30,000 and I minus the 10,000 that they say are military, which you can say the military signed up for. So if you got 20,000 compared to 1,400, what's this genocide side? Is it the Palestinians are being genocide or are the Israelis?
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you think...
Wait, answer my question first, though.
I will with a question.
Okay.
In typical Jewish fashion, okay?
Yeah. Okay.
Which is... That's such I'll answer it. I'll give you my answer in the form of a question. Do you think that Israel and the IDF is deliberately and consciously trying to kill innocent people?
Yes.
Okay, well, I disagree with you. I think they're trying to kill combatants, and the combatants are hiding behind innocent people. Israel's not trying to kill women and children. Why would they do that?
They destroy hospitals with women and children.
With terror tunnels underneath, and with they finding all these, munitions in the hospitals. Why is Hamas building at a hospital?
Think about what you just said.
Okay.
I said it's destroying hospitals for women and children. You just gave me an excuse to kill women.
I'm explaining why they had to do it.
I'm not saying
where the military headquarters is.
Just listen to what I'm saying. They are killing innocents. You're trying to say...
They're trying to avoid that when possible, but when you put...
If you put the weapons where the hospital is at, they're gonna say, F these kids, F these women, we're gonna bomb the hospital.
No, you have to ask, why is F the children and women that Hamas is putting bombs next to their beds? Why are they using hospitals as a place to set up a military base?
Right.
Why are they using orphanages?
Did they find the weapons there?
Yes, they have found weapons there, according to any international observers. They have found active weapons there, and they found tunnels and headquarters.
Tunnels is anywhere, and I don't think you're in
a position. No, the headquarters was found at that hospital you're talking about.
All I was going to say, when it comes to tunnels, I don't know if you want to talk about tunnels, because the Jewish people had that tunnel out here. So y'all just as good at tunnels as the Palestinians.
Were they using it to kill people?
They was using it to do all types of...
You're talking about the Chabad tunnel in New York. It has nothing to do with Israel.
Were they not Jewish?
Yeah, but they're Americans. They're not Israelis. They're building that in order to have a mikvah, and in order to these kids, these hooligans, these Chabad hooligans are using
bad Jewish people.
No, that's a nothing burger. But to get back to your history,
not the history.
I want to address that.
Not the history part. I don't mind the history part. But just on the record, if there's weapons at a hospital and there's women and children there, you're going to kill the women and children.
You try your best not to, but you have to get the military.
That's a yes or no.
Yes, you are, but you have to try not to.
You can't say that you're not.
You can't say that innocent people aren't being killed. I mean, explain why. The
population is genocide.
No, genocide is if you deliberately and consciously try to kill people based upon their ethnic background.
That is deliberate.
It's actually Israelis. The Israeli army and the soldiers are putting their lives at risk.
It's not deliberate if they blow up a warehouse and then they find out that women and children was in the warehouse.
No, I'll tell you what.
What they're doing is you're counting the cost. You say it's better to kill the women and children to get these supposed weapons out of here than to leave these women and children alive and then they take these weapons and use them on us. That's your hypothesis.
Look, if Israel wanted to kill women and children, they could drop a big fat bomb on the whole place. But instead, they have soldiers have to go there and get killed themselves to try to find their enemies' rocket launchers, which are being used to kill Israelis. So the question is, why are they putting rocket launchers and building terror tunnels underneath civilian locations in violation of all standards of international law and custom?
That's a good question. It goes right back to your forced occupancy of Palestine.
Israel wasn't occupying Gaza. I just explained in the beginning, Israel completely...
That's not what I'm talking about.
You're talking about Gaza. That's the subject there.
No. What I mean is, when we talk about the history like when we talking about Gaza, you only withdrew, it says, from 2005 to 2006. No one on this live stream is going to believe that all of Israel can withdraw in a year. No one's going to believe that.
From Gaza?
Yeah.
But they did.
No, not completely. No one.
Yes, they did completely, 100%.
No.
Israel completely withdrew from Gaza, and Gaza had the opportunity to create a responsible state that would have been sovereign, and they could have existed peacefully alongside Israel. Instead, they chose to invade Israel. That's the facts. Those are history.
That's not the history of Palestine, because
again, no, but the history of Gaza. But I'll talk about Palestine.
Let Captain get in, and I'll let you get back in, Charles. Go ahead, Captain.
Gaza and Palestine or Israel?
Well, Palestine, first of all, I would argue that Palestine is Israel. But
I'm going to ask you, is Gaza in Palestine or Israel?
Well, right now, I think it's pretty much in Israel, because they've occupied it. They've had to reoccupy it, unfortunately, which they did not want to do.
And then Israel itself, was that at one time Palestine before 48?
Yes, it was Jewish Palestine. Yes, it was.
No, it was all. It was just all Palestine, and then it got divided, right?
Well, it got divided in 1921 between Jewish Palestine and Arab Palestine, or what's called Cisjordan and Transjordan. Transjordan eventually became the Arab Kingdom of Jordan, and Cisjordan eventually became the Jewish state of Israel. So Palestine was divided at that time.
Right, and how was it divided?
It was divided along the Jordan River with the west part.
What I'm asking you, when I say how was it divided like the Palestinians wanted to divide, or they did not want to divide? Were they promised that it was going to be okay to have it divided? Like, that's what I'm asking. That's the history that I'm talking about.
Well, it's okay. Let me address the entire history here.
Thank you.
You're welcome. First of all, the Jews didn't just show up in that miserable little strip of land that we now know as Israel. I get into this in my book, The Anti-Semitic Imagination. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, sorry. Where I point out that Jews have always lived there, especially in the cities, that Zionism is a movement that is nothing more and nothing less than the national and religious aspirations of the Jewish people, that every generation from the time of the destruction of the temple right up to independence in 1948 has seen Jews trying to reassert their sovereignty in their homeland. And I get into this year by year, decade by decade in my new book, The Anti-Semitic Imagination. Those are facts of history. As far as Arabs in Palestine go, and the word Palestine, by the way, traces back to the Roman times. The Roman Emperor Hadrian named it Palestine after he destroyed Jerusalem after the Bar Kokhba Rebellion, because he figured the Jewish people were finished. They're over. So he renamed it after their worst enemy, which are the Philistines. That's where the word Palestine comes from. Although more recent scholars say that the word Palestine actually is a derivative from the word Judea. And I think there might be some truth to that. But either way, every generation has seen the Jewish people trying to go back there and to reassert their sovereignty. They really started to immigrate in larger numbers after 1800, and when Napoleon briefly occupied the region from the Turks. It had been under control of the Turks. At that time, it was known as South Syria. After World War I, the British and the French divided up the region, and they betrayed the Arabs when they did that. And they gave the British section to the Jewish people after the signing of the Balfour Declaration. Now, what's not known about that is that at the same time, the Arab head of state, King Faisal bin Hussein, who is recognized as the main figure in the Arab world, he's a direct descendant of the Prophet Muhammad, he signed an agreement with the head of the World Zionist Organization, recognizing Israel, Jewish Palestine, in 1917, February 6th of 1917. It was, or 1918, I'm sorry. It was part of the Paris Peace Agreement that ended World War I. And the reason he did it was because he could see that the Jewish people who were immigrating into Palestine at the time were creating this incredible, dynamic, organic society where they were growing crops and they were building businesses and they were developing democracy and their growing technology. And he wanted the same thing for his Arab countries after World War I. And so he figured that by this nationalist movement would work hand in glove with Arab nationalist movements. And together they would develop sovereignty. At the time, he wrote a letter to Felix Frankfurter, who was the president of Harvard Law School and who's a major Jewish Zionist figure, saying, I want to welcome our cousins home to their homeland. I want to give you a hearty welcome home. And the attitude amongst a lot of Arabs at that time was that they could coexist with this new state as long as Israel reached two conditions, which they've met. The first is that they would respect the rights of the Arab minority. And the second was that they would respect the sacredness of Islamic holy sites. Israel has done that. They haven't done it perfectly, but they've tried to do it, and they've basically done that. The problem is that there was a more radical element within the Arab world that overtook King Faisal and launched a war against the newly arriving Israelis. The only other thing I want to note before we go on to, with you, Captain, is that most of the Palestinians who are now claiming to have, you know, been there, and they say the Israelis kicked them out, they started to emigrate into that region around the same time that there was an increase in Jewish emigration at the end of the 19th century. And the reason they started to emigrate there was because the Jews were building businesses and they were developing cities and they were developing farms, and they wanted to work and they wanted to take advantage of it. They wanted, you know, they wanted to be a part of it. But they're not descended from any kind of ancient people. They all started to arrive essentially at the same time. I mean, if you look at Yasser Arafat, for example, he was Egyptian. I mean, there were a couple of very aristocratic Arab families that are still there that had been there all along, and there were Jewish families as well. But it's a little deceptive to say that they had some kind of an indigenous right to the region, because they really started emigrating en masse around the same time as the Jews started emigrating en masse, which started in the late 19th century.
All right, that must be, like you say, you're going to do it. You answered that in the Jewish way, as you would say. So I'll give a different...
How else would I?
That's why we're here.
Right. That's a little Jewish perspective, right?
We know Jewish, man.
You know the Jews, right? We can be a little tricky, all right?
You say a little tricky? I wouldn't say a little tricky.
I would say
a whole lot of tricky. That's what I'm saying.
A whole lot of trickiness?
Yeah.
I'm saying it as I know it.
Yeah, so like when I look at the history, you can go back to the Jewish Colonial Trust that Theodore Herzl first started. When he first started that, you could say Theodore Herzl is the father of Zionism, or Zionist, however you want to.
Modern Zionism, not Zionism. As I said, Zionism is part of Judaism.
Now, Go ahead, Kevin.
I turn into a different person when I get interrupted.
Yeah, like, no, I was let him go, because we have respectful support. Go ahead, Captain.
Okay. Hold on one second. I got to unmute on my other thing. Okay. So what I was saying was, you threw me off a little bit. So you got the Jewish Colonial Trust. That's the original name of the bank, Lumi, if I'm saying
Lumi. Yep.
I appreciate that. That's two. Lumi. The original name was Jewish Colonial Trust. Why do people think it was colonial? Because colonial goes with colonize, colonialism, things that other nations do when they take another people's land and then imprint their way of life onto that land. You can look up Theodore Herzl's letter where he spoke about colonizing. I believe the letter was to, let me see if I can find it in my notes. I believe the letter was to, oh my God, man, I can't find, oh yeah, to Cecil Rhodes. Because Cecil Rhodes, he had just did the same thing. He had colonized Shona in Africa and he named it Rhodesia.
Yeah.
And Herzl applauded that effort. And it says it doesn't involve Africa, but a piece of Asia Minor, not Englishmen, but Jews that colonized in Africa. Because, you know, Jewish people try to be innocent of these things, but they're colonizers just like every other white man is a colonizer. It says, when do I happen to turn to you in this way out of the matter for you? How indeed? Because it is something colonial. You, Mr. Rhodes, are visionary